after all the things that they've seen in their lives, what is a flamey head, Bev? What is that going to do with any? What is that going to do?
Oh my God.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Wah!
Right?
Huzzah!
That's the voice of CinemaSins, ladies and gentlemen.
The voice. It's what you know and love. And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Sher.
Zing!
Yes, you brought out the weird ones today. It's a good one. It's good ones. Are you guys angry about something? I know I am.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
I'm as mad as hell!
You've never seen me very upset.
I'm tired of these clickbaity headlines that will refer to an unknown actor who's committed a crime as Breaking Bad star or Captain Marvel star. So the most recent one was Captain Marvel star arrested for, like, killing her mother or
Captain
something.
Captain America.
Captain America, not Captain Marvel. Sorry.
It doesn't matter, really, though.
It doesn't. You drill down, and she's like in one scene, I think. You would never know her name. She's not any kind of star of Captain America, but that got you to click because you thought it might be Chris Evans.
Okay, I hadn't seen this headline. So the headline is... The movie's actor arrested for murder.
Yes. And this is not the first time. I saw one about a year ago that was Breaking Bad star arrested for burglary, and it was some guy that had two lines on one episode.
Oh.
It's like Harry Potter star arrested for blowing a goat, and it's like,
yeah, right?
One of the kids in the cafeteria.
No one, Hollywood is rampant with blowing the goats, man.
And my point is... Like, this is, I get it. Your job is hard. You got to make money. The only way you make money is by selling ads. The only way you sell ads is by getting clicks. So you do whatever it takes to get clicks, which is why you get all these fucking websites now that every movie that comes out will be like, does this movie have an end credit scene? Does this movie have an end credit scene? Or every time Jim Carrey makes a painting about Trump, the Wrap is going to post a whole article about Jim Carrey's painting because people click on that shit. Just like, I think it's the Wrap, every single day does a Donald Trump tweet storm today, and it's just lists whatever he tweeted for the day.
Oh.
And it's not fucking journalism.
Mm-mm.
It's not fucking journalism.
Yeah.
Just say obscure actress, you know, arrested for ice picking her mom. That's salacious enough.
And
Did she ice pick?
I don't know if it was an ice pick. Oh. I might have made that up.
And I even wonder why it even has to be a story. Like, it's a murder just like any other murder that happens.
Yes.
At that point, to me, I feel like I'm in Captain America more than this person. That comes up, and it's like, yeah, it may get you clicks, but I'm wondering how many clicks does that get you? Does it get you a lot? Yeah, I guess it does, but most of the time you see the picture and you're like, I don't know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you click to see who the name is, but then when you see the name, you're basically just going to the IMDb after that and you're going, who is this person?
Yep.
Because that's the way it always is. Yeah.
But the thing is, I think that a lot of advertisers, we've covered this before, but I think a lot of advertisers just throw money at old school metrics. And when the web was first ballooning, it was clicks, it was page views, and that translates to a lot of advertisers as eyeballs. Now savvy advertisers are, you know, buying ads that provide them more than just a click or a page view. And this is YouTube, you know, pays out different for all the different varieties of ads. If you watch one of our videos and it's a skippable ad, but you watch it all the way to the end, we get more per that video than if you skipped it. And so, yeah, I think a lot of these websites are able to turn to their advertisers and say, we got 30,000 clicks on this article. And they're not even talking to the advertiser. They're talking to the middlemen of the middlemen of the middlemen. And somewhere on the other end of that is Coca-Cola, who all they know is we threw $600 million at advertising this year.
Mm-hmm.
But it's maddening to me as a consumer because there are articles of value on Deadline and The Wrap and some of these websites. There are informational news pieces I want to read. If Chris Evans murdered his mom, that would be fucking newsworthy.
Yes,
and
it would.
I would want to read about that. Mm-hmm. But when you write Captain America star arrested for murder, you fucked me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You fucked me with your whole fist.
Yep. Yep.
I'm sick of it. Drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the tide may be turning because that was the headline for 2 or 3 days, and then I started seeing headlines that said, like, co-star of a Captain America,
what?
Or small, a small actor in small role from Captain America.
Oh, okay. Now, that You know what? Why don't they just do that?
They
just
should.
Fucking do that.
They fucking should.
You've got the name recognition of the movie. You've got the context for it.
Yes.
You're probably going to still click on that article.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10.
Yeah. But just I won't feel. I won't feel fucked.
Right.
Yeah.
I won't
yeah.
feel cheated.
Just a little pinky.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
It'll feel like a little poof of air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's just unreasonable. I know we've yelled at these clickbaity things before, but it's getting out of hand, right?
Well, it's long been out of hand. I mean, it's long been that way. It's just that it's double annoying when it's so transparent, and then they make you sort of go, well, then who is it? Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so curious as to who this is.
The other thing that sucks is that article, if I went back to it, I guarantee you it buries the lead. I guarantee you it's like, Captain America is a movie that came out in 2012 and grossed such and such and such, starring Chris Evans and from Marvel Studios. Blah, 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 blah. And that'll be like the fourth paragraph. One of the stars of that movie is such and such, who just killed her mother. By the way, for all I know, it's not even a murder. I just keep making it a
murder.
It's
a murder.
I thought it was a murder. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a I think it was a matricide. I think it was her mother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was her mom.
She killed her mattress?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
It was. She went to the mattresses. she killed her mom. That was the story. But like, yeah. But Captain America actor did this.
Yeah. So do we know what she was? Like, would I know what character she was?
I don't.
Do you remember?
I don't remember. So. I read the literal description of which scene she's in.
I think we're making the point right now.
We are. She's a glorified extra. I think she has a line or two.
Her name's Molly Fitzgerald.
Good for Molly.
Yeah, good for Molly. And she played Stark Girl.
Stark Girl.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Whole article out of that.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
All right. So I went to watch Uncut Gems at at our old theater, Hollywood 27. I think this is going to be a double rant. One is a rant that's continuing from the time I went to see Motherless Brooklyn at the same theater. But there's another one that I have now that there's a, you know, now that we have reserve seating. What is the etiquette about buying your seats at reserve seating? Do you have to buy tickets like right next to a person?
No.
I understand sometimes you want to sit center of the screen and everything, but there's no problem being slightly to the right, whatever. I was in when I went to buy my ticket for Uncut Gems, there was about 20 tickets sold for an auditorium that has 170 seats or so. And I bought a ticket that was probably should have gotten a four seat difference, but three seat difference between two tickets that were already sold. And I was like, well, if anybody else buys ticket to this, there's a plenty of other seats to my right that they can buy or whatever. And I probably should have done the four seat thing, because that way they could have gotten a seat between them and between me, whatever. But it started filling up a little bit around showtime. And then I'm sitting there and there's this woman and her boyfriend walking towards me, and I actually did not move my legs, because I was like, there's no fucking way they bought tickets right next to me. and she comes up to my legs and goes, excuse me. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I, you know, moved my legs, and they walked, and then it sat right next to me. And I'm like, there's fucking six seats to my right.
That's not right.
And
up.
But it I mean, and I, you know, there's people out there who've bought one or two tickets to an auditorium that has nothing.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you there's been somebody who's bought a ticket right next to them.
What's the deal with that? I mean, why?
It's like in the end of John Wick 3 when Mark Dacascos walks right up to John Wick on the couch and sits literally right next to him instead of anywhere else. Yeah. And I think the sin we wrote was doing this.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, who the fuck does that?
Yeah, that's
some
gross.
Kind of like presentation purist that has to, like, when I first fell in love with movies, college.
Mm-hmm.
For a good while, I always wanted to sit middle up and down, middle left and right, which is basically, you know, I want the best seat in the house. And you know, at times you would sit next to people to get that experience, but that has waned as I have become more anxious and intolerant of people.
You ain't fucking kidding, man. I got at our theater when we went to see Uncut Gems, there's a theater near me that has two on the back row, two seats on one side of the projection booth, two seats on the other. We got like box seats. We got the two seats.
Nice.
It was glorious.
Yeah, and you don't even have to worry about those stinky people.
Oh, my God.
And then what do you do? Like, do you, if you're Chris in that situation, and you get up and move down a couple, like, well, what are you saying about those
people?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, if I move over a seat, then I'm, like, saying, I don't want to be touching elbows with you. Right. You're a dick.
I don't like you.
Yeah. So, I mean... Fine. I was able to watch my movie and not, they were fine. They didn't do anything stupid or anything like that. It's just that it annoyed me considering that there was plenty of seats to my right. Mm-hmm. And it's not like your seats are so much better getting to my immediate left.
Right.
Yes, you are more centered, but it's not a big fucking deal. And as far as comfort is concerned, you should have gotten the two seats, one seat away from my, mm-hmm. from to my right. Another thing that happens. Now, I am cursed with knowing too much about movie projection.
Mm.
And I told you about that Motherless Brooklyn thing where I noticed that the lights were down during the previews.
Mm.
And I was like, should I come out and say something? Because what I'm saying to an usher or somebody like that who doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about, mm-mm. they're how are they going to convey this message if there's no manager around?
Yeah, yeah.
Because so I decided to go full on with this. I went in, there was no sound during the like ads before the movie, the preview start and everything. I was like, the cycle did not work right. The lights didn't get recycled back up to full level. When the movie started, it was completely pitch black, and now all you have is the only light in the auditorium is on the screen, and there's no sound, and that means you fucking messed up your cues on your movie.
This is the same issue.
Same issue.
Uncut Gems that you had.
Same issue.
Wow.
So I came out. There's no manager about. This is Hollywood 27 after all.
Yeah.
And there is an usher, and I'm like. How am I going to explain
you
this?
Goddamn motherfucker.
Exactly. How do I explain this? First off, just went with the easy thing. There's no sound in the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started going to this whole, it makes, I bet my eyes rolled like fucking like slot machines when she said this. Oh, well, yeah, when the satellite's playing its thing, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, gotcha, understand, satellite. Just saying that with no sound and the lights are completely down, that sounds like the cycle is off, and that means that the lights are going to come back up during when the movie starts. And she definitely told somebody because they went over and the lights came up. Now, again, I am cursed with knowing too much about projection. And I looked at those lights and I was like, those lights are too bright.
Oh,
those
they're not at half speed.
They're not
whatever.
At half. These lights are not going to go down. In fact, I guarantee whoever went up there went and cycled at one time, saw the lights come up, and said, "Ah, that's all we needed to
God
do."
Damn.
And I sat there and I was like, "Fuck! I should complain about this again, but what good is it going to do?"
Yeah.
I'm going to just wait, and the lights are going to be fucking up during the preview, and everybody else can go and complain about this.
Yeah.
And yeah, the movie starts, lights are still up in that same whatever. And I even wondered if they put any cues at all on this thing, because once people did complain and the lights did come down for the feature and everything, and the credits came, the lights didn't come up during the credits.
Oh, Jesus. God.
And I was like, is there any cue on this? Is it possible that I fucked this auditorium by not saying anything? If I had just said nothing, would the lights have just stayed where they were? And look, I've always told people if they have a bad experience at a theater, they need to tell the manager mm-hmm. about it. Eventually it gets to, and if they don't want to do anything about it, you can go up the flagpole and tell them this is what happens and whatever. And I'm close to doing that. I don't really want to interact with Regal Cinemas anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, but it's rare when I play the, I used to do projection in this fucking booth. And that's what I did. I was like, hey, look, I'm just saying the cycle seems to be off. I used to run projection at this booth in this very theater. I can tell you right now, these lights are not where they're supposed to be and blah, blah, blah. But you know, none of these people know anything about projection anymore. They may know how to make a movie. They may know how to like put previews together and a feature and all that. But they're fucking up on these cues. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're fucking up masking a lot too. It feels like there's a lot more like scope features running through a flat lens where it used to be with 35 millimeter that would blow up and distort everything if you'd run a flat 1.85:1 through a 2.35 lens. Or a 2.35 through a 1.85. It would always blow things up. Now with digital, it's like if you're running a scope through a flat, you'll see the black line, the black bars or whatever. And it's like, but they fuck that shit up too. Mm. Previews are often fucked up. Like, yeah. Where it's like, it's just the box on the screen. I was like, I guarantee you that whoever made this preview did not intend it to be a box on the screen. So there's just a lot of this shit going on. And I know too much, but I don't want to get involved.
Too much.
Yeah.
Oh man. I don't have as much of a rant as I do a bit of a story.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Gatlinburg, Tennessee last week. This week, for a little holiday vacation with the family. You've been to Gatlinburg.
You've been to Gatlinburg.
Mm-hmm. So, one of the days we went on the Strip. The Strip is this very busy, bustling, commercial stretch of road where there's shops and candy stores and all kinds of things.
It's like a theme park without any rides.
Yeah, exactly. And I hadn't been there in probably about 10 years, and I forgot how commercialized it was.
A lot of places where you can get those log cabin pancakes.
Oh my God. Pancakes are everywhere. They're trinkets of crap that you don't need. So as background of this story, my son has just started getting into Breath of the Wild, The Legend of Zelda, which Chris has played and enjoyed very much.
And
right?
Played way too obsessively.
Well, he's getting obsessed too. So he wants to get some Link gear and stuff like that. And so I was like, that game's been out for a while. Probably not going to find any Link merchandise. Lo and behold, we walk down the street in one of the display windows in the upstairs shops. There's a Link shield. He's like, I want that shield. Man, first of all, this is New Year's Eve, and there's a big old New Year's Eve celebration in Gatlinburg. So everybody in the goddamn universe is on the street right now.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Chicago. I've been to New York. I've been to, you know, busy cities. I have never been jostled around on a sidewalk more than I was in Gatlinburg, Tennessee on New Year's Eve. So we set our course. We're like, all right, let's see how much the shield is. We go up. And on the way up, I'm like, this is weird. Hookahs, pipes, swords, real swords.
Oh, yes.
Airsoft guns and dildos.
Nice.
Did you say dildos?
Dildos, yes. The floppy ones. The ones that you can...
They're like, you know, grizzly bear shaped or something.
Gatlinburg, Tennessee welcomes you.
That's right.
And it's got a little tip.
Only
on
you
thing.
Can prevent forest fires.
So
by coming.
I'm like, don't look at anything. I'm like, we're walking up this thing, and I'm like, okay, don't look at anything. Just look straight ahead. And we get up there, and I'm like, do you have a Link shield? And he's like, oh, man. He's a Russian guy. Oh, man. I just sold out the last one yesterday. That's my Russian. And I was like, ah, shit. Okay, so don't look at anything. We go straight down. So I'm like, sorry, man, Link shield, not there. So we walk down the street a little bit. Lo and behold, another fucking Link shield on the other side of the street. Walk over the other side of the street. I'm like, all right, that looks like a reputable place. It's cool. Let's go upstairs. Not only like guns and knives and swords, but like cleavers and like real fucking swords and shit like that. No dildos in this one, but they did have the hookahs and the glass pipes and all that stuff. We find the shield. The shield is super fucking expensive. It's like $75 for a plastic ass shield. But they have Link's sword. So I'm like, yeah, what about the sword for a reasonable price? And he's like, oh, that's awesome. Sure. That's perfectly fine. So there's one person in the store, some sort of Eastern European fine gentleman, right? And so I hear him talking to the other people. Place is fucking packed. Place is fucking packed. And he's like, hey, I'll make you a deal. I make a deal. Give me 10 for 2 or something like that, right? And so he's making deals. I'm like, this place seems a little shady. What with all the knives and the sharp and stuff, mm-hmm. but no dildos, mm-hmm. bear-shaped mm-hmm. dildos. And so mm-hmm. I'm like, there's no way out of this. I have to buy this sword at this point. So he gets done with this thing. I'm like, can we get the Link sword? And he's like, what sword? And I was like, the Link sword. He's like, I don't know what that is. I'm like, this one over here. He's like, that's plastic. And I was like, yeah, I know. It's cool. We don't want to. He's like, you want a real sword? I'll show you a real sword.
Oh,
I was
God.
Like, no, I don't want a real sword. I want that. And so he goes over and he's like, oh, that sword's too small. I'll go get you a big one. So he goes back in the back, like unwraps this thing. It's a sword, a Link sword, that's as big as my son. And my son is not small anymore. And I'm like, that's too big. He's like, $35. I'm like,
oh, God.
No,
what the fuck?
No. So he takes it out of the thing and he's like, oh, oil. I'm like, the fuck? And he's like, oh, the Chinese, they make them all out of oil. I'm like, okay, that's good to know. Yeah. Just give me the small one. And he's like, you want to make a deal? I was like, no, I just want the sword. And he's like, Jesus. $25. And I'm like, just fine.
Who knew this shady ass fucking shit was going on in Gatlinburg of all places?
Oh, it gets worse. Oh, okay. No, so we go, now we're on one side of the thing, packed, knives and swords everywhere. We somehow make it over to the cash register. This guy's going in the serpentine thing. I think he went underground or whatever. Mm-hmm, he comes back. There's an older gentleman waiting at the register. So I wait for a second. I'm like, are you checking out or whatever? The guy says, yeah, here's your total and that kind of thing. And so the guy moves to the side. And he's like, are you Buddy? He's talking to the cashier. He's like, Buddy. He's like, yeah, I was sent here to look for a Buddy. He's like, a Buddy who? He's like, a Buddy that works here. So he looks at him, he's like, we're all buddies.
What?
Maybe I'd be your buddy. What do you need?
Oh, my God.
And so the older gentleman just kind of looks at him and sidles away. So I'm wondering, what the fuck is he running out of this thing?
No kidding.
Like, the obvious things are already dangerous. The guns and the knives and the hookahs. What the fuck is he running out of this place?
This dude.
Where a dude, hey, go check on Buddy at the upstairs hookah knife shop.
There's all sorts of off catalog shit in this store.
He's selling whores. He's selling drugs. What else is he selling?
Drug horse?
Drug horse.
Yeah, drug
horse. Horse full of drugs.
Yes.
By the way, your Eastern European and your Russian are very similar.
Isn't that amazing, right? I'll be a buddy. What do you need? Yeah, I'll be a buddy.
Maybe we're all buddies.
So we hightailed it out of there as soon as I just threw cash at him. I was like, fuck off, man.
It's like, I just sit there and I think, Gatlinburg, like, people go out there, yeah, sure, to get away and get in a cabin and enjoy nature and all that. But apparently there's a big ass market for like dildos and like
I don't know about dildos. When I was there, I saw cheap but real samurai swords in every other store I went in.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
And I think it's just I don't know. I think maybe they're marketing at the little boys that come with the parents because little boys are like, I want a sword.
The first one that we went to was all swords and guns and those floppy dildo things. I didn't try it out. I don't know how much flex it had on it.
Can you sell a dildo? Are you sure it wasn't like a drain cleaner or a declogger or something? Can you sell a dildo in a regular store?
It was a personal massager. No, yeah, you can sell a dildo in a regular store.
Can you?
They are.
I think so. Yeah.
You can fucking traffic with whatever this guy was trafficking in the second store.
I'm not saying
everything is 100% legal around here.
You can't walk into Walmart and buy a dildo. Is all I'm saying.
This isn't fucking Walmart.
I'm talking about the legality, not the specific store.
Well, they can sell dildos. I mean, they weren't even gigantic. They were just regular size.
Mm.
I mean, compared to me. so that's my story of how we got a Link sword that's probably poison Chinese oil.
It's got like drugs inside the blade.
There
somewhere.
You go. Maybe it's made of cocaine.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what is that guy running? It has to be hooas.
No, I think it's probably just drugs or sports betting.
Oh. Sports betting is so dull though.
It's dull, but it's not legal in Tennessee.
That's true.
Mm.
I like to pretend it was drug horse.
Although, Is it going to be legal? Did they legalize it?
Who knows? I don't know. It seems like you can get on a site right now and legally do stuff.
There's something that is going on with, I think MGM wants to build a hotel in Nashville. And MGM is, of course, a casino. That's what they build. They build casino hotels and casinos and everything. And there was some rule that got, it is a sports betting thing because the Daily Fantasy Sports was on was on notice for a bit there, but I think it's been passed. Actually, it might have been one of those things where our governor Bill Lee decided not to sign whatever had come up to his desk.
He's doing that a lot these days.
Yeah, and so it basically just became law because of the time went away. I don't know how you justify your I don't know how you justify those actions, by the way. You either are for it or against it, and you might as well
he wants to be able to say later on, I didn't sign that.
Yeah,
that's all it is.
Yeah, it's no different from signing it, though. That's the thing.
Well, it's like an actor who stars in a movie and then disowns it and wants his name off the project.
Right
Like, yeah. He's still in the movie.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what had come up. There's that, and I think that it was also something clearing the way for somebody like MGM to build a casino, not a casino, but at least a hotel in downtown Nashville.
Well, so, good. Now we'd have MGM and fucking Jimmy Buffett.
There was a Margaritaville in Gatlinburg, by the way.
Well, of course there was.
He's fucking printing money these days.
He is. What is he, like 96? He's printing money to give to his ancestors.
No, he's probably
his
late 60s.
Descendants, not his ancestors.
Who?
Jimmy Buffett?
His ancestors are already
dead. Oh, I think he's in his 70s.
Descendants 70s? Are younger than him. Ancestors.
I so. I believe what you mean is Pina Colada Burke.
He's got his own channel.
73
on satellite radio.
Yeah, fuck Jimmy Buffett. I don't like it. I don't like it. Fuck him with the fist.
Yeah,
with a link sword.
I mean, he's probably a fine guy,
with
but
a
like
bear dildo?
I hate
a bear dildo. With your hand not in a fist.
I want to go back and explore those dildos because I was trying to like focus his attention away from them, so I didn't examine them closely, but they just seemed like regular floppy, you know what I'm talking about, like the semi-hard plastic.
right Yeah,
I don't know as much about dildos as you do.
The Mighty Aphrodite thing,
the half chub dildos.
Yeah, right, where like Woody Allen pushes on the table and the thing sways a little.
Jesus.
Let's move on.
But seriously, dildos and swords.
I'm just saying, if one store can sell dildos, why aren't all the stores selling dildos? I would think dildos would be a bigger market than swords.
I didn't go in many of these stores. Maybe there are.
I was there on my honeymoon. I'd have bought a dildo if I'd have seen one.
One of those.
Never mind.
I don't have it right now.
That store that doesn't sell dildos is probably like, we're a family establishment.
We only sell guns and knives.
Oh my God! It was a broadsword that I swear to God was that thick. God damn!
Yeah, that Game of Thrones has pushed a lot of the sword collecting. I think where people just like to have a big ass sword and put it on their wall.
Yeah,
but in Gatlinburg, that's what kills me about it. It's you've gone there for a vacation. Oh yeah, you can buy swords too. Exactly.
And thank God he got a fucking like plastic or whatever it is sword, because he was waving it around all in the crowd and shit like that. Like, I imagine there are kids that get real swords.
How's there not a stabbing every night in Gatlinburg?
I don't know, man.
Was that your, like, that wasn't like your first time there, though, was it?
No, but that was the first time where we did that.
You go up to, what's the next put? Pigeon Forge or Sevierville, like, it's way more, it's all the commercialization with none of the quaint.
Right. And there's no, like, sidewalks and shit like that
where you can actually walk. Strip mall shit.
Yeah, yeah, it's all strip mall, which we did. But also, we got away and got up in the mountains and hiked quite a bit, and it was goddamn lovely.
Yeah, the Smokies are awesome.
Oh my God.
Okay, so we got some recommends and some warns.
Oh, I'm excited about this because you guys are fucking armed.
Totes amazeballs.
They're great.
It won the Academy Award.
Oh, for what?
For best movie ever made.
I came with like 7.
Bring it.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to go first?
Yeah, with your big jugs.
The ones I most want to talk about, one is a movie I hadn't seen in maybe 20 years. One is a movie that I had never seen, and their connection will become obvious in a moment. The first one I watched 4 days ago, for the first time in 20 years, Dangerous Liaisons.
Yeah.
Movie fucking rules. That's Malkovich, right?
Yes. Michelle Pfeiffer has maybe never been better. Mm-hmm. Like, I watched this. This came out in 88. I watched it in college, so I came to it 5-6 years late. But it was, you know, when you're getting into movies and you like the awards, and then you see a movie on the video shelf that has Glenn Close, Michelle Pfeiffer, Uma Thurman, Keanu Reeves, John Malkovich, and, by the way, Peter Capaldi in his pre-Doctor Who
days.
You pick it up and you watch it. And now this is, most of you listening probably would best know this as the non-90s Cruel Intentions.
Right.
And this is set in like 17th century France. But if you've seen Cruel Intentions, you get the gist of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Close is playing Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah.
Uma Thurman is playing Selma Blair.
Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer is playing Reese Witherspoon.
Yep.
They're all outstanding. Now, this movie fucks. This movie is sexy and pervy. And because, first of all, in the original story and the play and this movie, Uma Thurman's character is 15 years old.
Yeah.
Like, in the Cruel Intentions, they don't really get too far into the, like, Selma Blair is played as young, but they don't.
Well,
like,
also, he's in high school, too.
Yeah.
In high school.
Yes. Whereas Malkovich's character, Valmont, is a grown man. Mm-hmm. And it's a little rapey.
Yeah.
In that one scene, because he basically starts kissing Uma Thurman and she says no.
Yeah, yeah.
And he keeps going. And at some point, she just gives in. And then feels ashamed, and it's just part of the story, no matter which version you're watching. But I had forgotten how gorgeous this movie looks,
mm-hmm.
And how great all the actors are, especially Malkovich. There's an edge here that is maybe only best noticed if you do what I did, and followed up by watching 1989's Valmont.
Yeah, Milos Forman.
Which is Milos Forman, who I thought had directed Dangerous Liaisons. That was Stephen Frears.
I thought so, too. That's what I just checked. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is King's Speech is playing Valmont.
Yep. Colin Firth. Colin Firth.
Colin Firth. Annette Bening is playing Sarah Michelle Gellar's role.
Mm.
She actually auditioned for Dangerous Liaisons.
These movies were made
within a year of each other.
Yeah.
And she ended up getting, she auditioned for Michelle Pfeiffer's role in Dangerous Liaisons. She ended up getting Glenn Close's role in Valmont. Young Meg Tilly.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something about young Meg Tilly.
Mm-hmm.
She's a fine Tilly.
Yeah. Yes, she is. Yes, she is.
Does she play the
Michelle Pfeiffer character, the girl he really falls in love with?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Who plays the younger?
Fairuza Balk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I made the same face.
And in this one, Fairuza Balk is 15.
And that scene is just as rapey in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Uma Thurman was 18, right?
Uma Thurman was 18. She actually has a nude scene in Dangerous Liaisons. Whereas Fairuza Balk, I can't remember. I think she gets almost as close as you can get.
You see her butt. He starts nuzzling her crack.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure his aim. You see this from the side. She's lying on her stomach, and he's telling her what to write in this letter. And he just goes down and puts his nose and mouth between her cheeks. And then you see her face, and then he ends up, you know, doing it to her. But if you look up the poster of Valmont, like 80% of the posters I've seen is him with his face resting on her naked ass.
Really?
On the poster for
the
movie.
Holy shit.
This movie is nowhere near as good. It is gorgeous. And both of these films used lavish costumes and used real sets from historic buildings in France. So you get that period. See, there you go. Get that period piece feel. It's him nuzzling her ass.
I don't know his name.
How did that get by the censors? I don't even know if the censors, like, do they sense posters?
Man, yeah, they do. Although I'm not sure, especially in 1989, whether that was a regular practice. I know that when I was working in theaters, there were several posters that, and it could possibly be. Not MPAA, but it could be just the theater companies themselves who have to display these posters. I know Zach and Miri Make a Porno was Zach and Miri on the poster.
Ah.
They couldn't just put Make a Porno on there. There's been some other posters back in the day that they've had to, like, take something off or whatever.
Huh.
But
Oh, wow. Fairuza Balk looks really different.
She does. She's really young, and she's fine. This movie's not as enjoyable. It's more boring. Colin Firth gives more of a happy-go-lucky Valmont.
Yeah.
He's more of, he's charming, funny, but, like, Malkovich is angry.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it delves much more into sexual politics. I don't even know why they ever adapted this movie to modern day, because that takes all of the subtext away from everything you're seeing. because back in, you know, this era of France, you were married off to who your parents told you to marry off to. And if you weren't a virgin anymore, that was a huge scandal. Anyway, Malkovich is really the takeaway for me, is there's like, there's a sneer on his face. Like, he's so bitter. Even in that last scene where he fucking seduces Michelle Pfeiffer, he's really mean to her.
Yeah.
He's like, you abandoned me. Like, you treated me with scorn. And, like, he basically talks her into sleeping with him by that kind of language.
Wow.
He's always, he looks like he's always, like, trying to get revenge for something through every scene.
Yeah. Anyway, so recommend Dangerous Liaisons, warn Valmont.
Okay.
If you're feeling really freaky, I would watch them both because I think it will help you appreciate Dangerous Liaisons even more and will help you condemn Cruel Intentions even more.
Had you seen Cruel Intentions before you saw Dangerous Liaisons the first time?
No, because it had not come out yet.
Okay. I did. So I saw Cruel Intentions. I knew it was based on Dangerous Liaisons. I just never had seen it. And my appreciation of the Malkovich one was tenfold after I compared it to fucking Cruel Intentions.
The Valmont is exactly what Jeremy is saying it is. It's like, you know, it's just the more boring, less salacious, except for that one scene you're talking about and everything. And Colin Firth just doesn't seem right for it.
No, he's too nice.
Too nice.
My favorite part is when Annette Bening says, you can put it anywhere.
Yes. What? And when she goes, I want to fuck.
She says you can put it anywhere.
What are you quoting?
Cruel Intentions.
Oh, but that was not, that was Sarah Michelle Gellar.
That was the joke.
The Annette Bening joke. Yeah. So by deconstructing the joke, I killed it, is what you're saying. I apologize.
You bring up Meg Tilly. If you're, she was the one that movie I always remember with her is Body Snatchers. The Gabrielle Anwar Body Snatchers. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it's good. Good movie. But Gabrielle Anwar and Meg Tilly are both in that. And good movie.
Related to Jennifer Tilly.
Sisters.
Sisters.
Meg Tilly.
There were never such devoted sisters. Look up.
But in Body Snatchers.
Well, and Gabrielle Anwar was naked in almost everything.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason I had a big crush on her.
Yeah.
You know what I like about best about you?
Reliably naked.
You're getting naked all the time. You got a special place in my heart.
Yes. I'm going to recommend The Two Popes on Netflix.
Oh, God. I want to watch this.
Okay, only in the last few days have I realized I've been confusing The Two Popes and the TV show The New Pope.
New Popes.
Because Jude Law was in one called The Young Pope, and then the sequel season to that is called The Two Popes, and Jude Law is in some kind of, the New Pope. And Jude Law is in some kind of coma, and John Malkovich's power becomes the Pope, and then the end of the trailer, Jude Law's eyes open, and you're like, oh, now they're going to have to deal with each other. And then there's this movie called The Two Popes. It's nothing to do with it.
Hold on. The New Pope is the sequel to The Young Pope?
Well, if it's not, I don't know why they cast Jude Law. Because it's the same channel, and he was on that Young Pope show.
There's too many popes out there. I hear this is very good. There's too many popes.
But this one's a comedy, right?
No, this one's a drama.
Oh.
It stars Anthony Hopkins as Pope Benedict and Jonathan Pryce as Pope Francis. Based on the true story. It's directed by Fernando Moraes, who did City of God.
Ooh.
Really?
Yeah. And it looks fucking amazing. I don't know if they got to actually shoot in Vatican City or whatever, or if the set designers are that awesome. I don't know, but this is everything looks sumptuous in that movie. It starts off with Pope John Paul dying, and then they have to elect a new pope, and the cardinal that Jonathan Pryce plays that ends up being Pope Francis, is in this nomination along with the Anthony Hopkins Pope Benedict, who will be Pope Benedict. Obviously, Anthony Hopkins, I guess, is Cardinal Ratzinger. Mm-hmm.
John Ratzinger, Ratzenberger.
Ratzenberger. He's got all those voices in Pixar. he's the one who wins. There's this talk in the Catholic Church about how they need to be a little bit more progressive. Because they're losing a lot of constituents and everything, but they elect this very like conservative guy. And Jonathan Pryce, who plays Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio, I think that's what mm-hmm. Bergoglio. He's from South America. I think he's from Argentina. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that everybody considers progressive and everything.
Friend of the poor and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yes. And in fact, it shows his life throughout this thing. There's a lot of flashbacks because it's basically Benedict calls Francis in and says, we need somebody progressive. And he's going through a scandal with one of his underlings. Underlings has stolen money or something. Mm. He says right off the bat, I don't believe in anything that you believe in as far as the way this is concerned, but I'm calling you here today because I think we need you. Hmm. And
is after he's become Pope.
Yeah,
right?
this is now years past at this point, because it was 2005, I believe, when he was elected, and then now it's like 2012, 2013, mm-hmm. somewhere around there. So they have this conversation. They're both men of God, but one feels like they should have that hard-nosed conservative edge, and the other guy's like, we should, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with being gay. There's what are the other abortion. He wants to be a little bit more liberal with and everything. But he also respects the position of the Pope. Jonathan Pryce is very humble, like all the way through this and everything. But yeah, there's some flashbacks in there where they're talking, and it shows like all this stuff. And I'm going to say Jonathan Pryce because I can't say this Bergoglio name really well, but like it shows all these things where he's going through this revolution in Argentina, and he's one of his major mistakes that he feels that he made was during a time where priests were being killed for their beliefs, and because there was this dictator that was just, you know, and there he had some friends who wanted to do stuff like on the side, but he didn't protect them, and he feels like he's been scandalized by that because it's in his own heart he believes he should have done more for his friends. Anyway, it's a conversation between two people who are just so diametrically opposed, but this, you know, Pope Benedict is like, I know in my heart we need this guy, even though I don't believe in anything he says. We need someone to bring back, you know, bring back people to the Catholic Church and everything. So it's mainly just conversations and flashbacks and things like that, but it's beautifully shot. You can't find two better actors playing these roles. And the conversations are just, you know, just great and rich, and you will not know where the time went once it's done.
So it's Catholics in cars getting coffee?
It's Catholics in cars getting coffee. Yes.
Did he arrange for Francis to get elected, or was he, that was his recommendation, and then the College of Cardinals?
Yeah, I think I think Pope Francis was already fairly popular with everybody in the conclave.
But he finished like third or something like that.
Yeah, it was third. Yeah. I think it was third. But the scandal and all this stuff like sort of brought to light that we need to appeal to more people and everything. And the Holy See or whatever still has some sway over this conclave. Mm. He basically says at some point, I can ensure that you will be elected. So like, you know, basically his backing means a lot.
And that's the Pope we have currently.
Pope
Francis. The one that slapped the lady at the thing and then had to apologize.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like he did anything all that
No,
well.
He didn't. The guy, I can't wait to see this because I've been following this stuff in pretty real time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think it's fascinating, especially Ratzenberger. Oh, Ratzenberger.
It's Ratzinger.
Sorry.
Ratzinger had the reputation for being an asshole when he was even considered for the papacy. And so when he got it, like, it seemed like it was a setback for Catholicism at the time. And that's why it's so fascinating to me that they did almost a 180 here.
Mm-hmm.
And this Francis is such like a man of the people and, you know, always wore he's always wearing like the frock that's, you know, kind of less gregarious and stuff like that. People take advantage when they're grabbing onto him and stuff like that. He should be smacking more people.
But that's what they were showing in there in a lot of the flashbacks and everything, is that this guy just really doesn't care about riches or comfort or anything. He, after this incident, and I've explained that poorly, that whole thing with his friends and everything, but essentially he feels like he should have done more for his friends during a time where dictators were telling everybody, were shooting priests in the street and all this other stuff. But like, even when he got to the level of cardinal, and this is really truly rags, but like, he was a nobody that sort of just started getting this reputation. And once he became a cardinal, that he you know, that's when you start living the high life and everything. But he decided not to do that. Now, this is what the movie says. I'm not sure how.
These are the accounts that I've heard, too.
It is the accounts you've heard. I'm assuming because you have Fernando Moraes here and it looks like a sensitive portrayal of everything and an honest portrayal. It's probably true. But yeah, he set up shop like basically under a bridge somewhere. And he didn't have any like opulent quarters at all. He didn't need anything. And even when he becomes Pope, there's some jokes in there basically where it's like he's trying to call in his own, like, it's almost like American president, right? Where he's like, calling in something, and I think he's trying to call for an airplane ticket or something. And he's like, yeah, my name is this, and the guy's like, ha ha ha, you mean like the Pope, you know? Like, I was like, yes, I am the Pope, you know. it's really, really good. I was a little hesitant to watch it because I was like, this thing sounds adversarial. Two popes, you know, is this going to be one of those, like, you know, the Tudors or some shit like that, you know, type of things? And I don't care about that type of thing, but this is like two men. It's funny, just two men who are just so opposed in viewpoints, but just getting along, having great conversation, and just beautifully shot. I can't recommend that enough.
I'm nice. Down.
Wow, that was a good sell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you got?
All right. So you recommended a movie to me the last time that we did a podcast.
Oh shit!
It was a Denis Villeneuve movie.
Yes,
and it was called Prisoners. Denis Villeneuve also directed a movie called Enemy.
Yeah.
For some reason, I heard Jeremy's Prisoners as Enemy. So I was like, cool, this I'm going to watch Enemy.
The Jake Gyllenhaal doppelganger movie.
Yeah.
This is the Jake Gyllenhaal doppelganger movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what to expect. Didn't know anything
about
the plot.
This is probably an awesome way to see Enemy, though.
I think so, yeah.
Because you're expecting maybe something else.
I didn't know what to expect. I just know that Jake was in it. I knew that there was there's a weird thing because of the Brothers movie that we talked about recently where there's like a duality thing going on. Prisoners has the two people. I mean, the posters look the exact same. They're both one-word things.
Yeah.
And that's my justification for it. So I watched Enemy. And it has such an Arrival feel to it. Obviously, same director. But it really does have that quiet, deliberately paced, huge ideas mentality going for it. There's some weird-ass shit in this movie. The conceit is that the two Jakes are there.
Mm-hmm. Two Jakes.
Yeah.
The first Jake is a frumpled college professor. Who does the same thing, does the same woman every night, which is Melanie Laurent is from Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah.
Is his girlfriend, Frumpy Jake. And he does literally the same thing to where, like, he does the same lecture. He does the same pattern of stuff when he gets home. It almost looked like he was a Groundhog Day situation to me at first where he's doing the same thing on a loop.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other Jake, so he sees, and this isn't a spoiler, he sees a guy in a movie that looks an awful lot like him. And he's like, oh, that's weird. So then he rents other, he looks him up on Proto IMDb, and he finds his other movies, and he looks him up, and it looks more and more like him. And then he says, well, I want to investigate this guy. And so he starts investigating this guy, and he turns into like an amateur sleuth. Turns out there is another Jake. There's another, a second Jake who's married to a pregnant woman that he impregnated. Mm-hmm. And
fancy that.
And he's an actor, and he's like all nutritious and healthy and stuff like that. And so I won't say anything else about the movie, but there's some huge, crazy ideas and visuals in this movie that make it absolutely striking, and it will stay with you for a long, long time.
Especially that last shot.
That last shot, I rewound and watched five times.
I did too.
Literally five times.
I did too.
Because first of all, it's so quick that you don't know really what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read for probably an hour about this movie afterwards. Turns out nobody knows what the fuck.
I was going to say, it's one of those movies that you're not going to get all the answers when you're done.
Even people who have literally, I mean, this is 2014, so it's been 5 years, but like 6 years ago.
Yeah, there's some great theories. And you're sitting here and you sit there and you go, yeah, but
I tell you what, man, there's one, and the final visual is really, really interesting, but there's one wide shot of, it's Toronto, I think, that they're, or Montreal. They're in Montreal. And the whole thing is shot through this, much like Sicario is, shot through this like patinaed, sepia-toned lens. And it makes it even more mysterious, I guess.
Sepia.
Mm-hmm. Sepia-ear. But there's one shot, because they show multiple overall pans of Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
later in the movie, they show one where it's very different. And it just cuts to it for maybe like 2 seconds, and then it cuts back to the action. And it's freaks you out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very reminiscent of Arrival, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That image. I can't recommend this movie enough. It'll head fuck you. It'll fuck you right in the head.
It'll fuck your head and your brain and your mind.
Yeah.
But it's so good. You've seen this movie, right?
I have.
Did you like it?
Yes.
Did you get the same Arrival? I'm saying it's Arrival vibes, even though that movie came two or three years later. But did you get the same vibes?
I see exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I had seen Arrival first.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, me too, yeah.
And went back, and this is how I saw Enemy and Prisoners. Prisoners just stayed with me more. Mm-hmm. It's not... I almost said Prisoners isn't as much of a head fuck, but that movie's still kind of a head fuck.
Mm-hmm.
But not in a you-won't-really-necessarily-know-what-happened kind of way. That one just made more of an impact on me, I guess.
Well,
there's a little too many unanswered questions in the two Jakes.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to remember how many. I think it was after Arrival. I went and found Enemy, and then I saw Sicario for the first time around that time too. And then I went all the way back and saw Incendies.
Oh yeah.
Which is a movie that a lot of people had been tossing around for a decade for us to consider for the decade. Also very good. Mm-hmm. Incendies is really good. But that's where I saw it. I saw all those like in the same area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like Enemy was like a real mind fuck out of all those.
I tell you what, either Jake can lock down some quality ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie Laurent. By the way, this is the only other thing I've ever seen Melanie Laurent in besides Inglourious Basterds.
Have you seen Now You See Me?
Oh, god damn. I forgot she was in that. I thought she was Diane Kruger.
Yeah. I feel like she's been in more stuff that you may have seen, because she kind of just kind of appears in some of these movies every once in a while. Doesn't have the same kind of big role as she does in Inglourious Basterds, but
also,
it looks like Now You See Me, though, is the only other big one that she's been
in. Who's that French chick in Tenet?
I don't know who that is.
The blonde, maybe she's not French. She looks like the French girl from Harry Potter 4, Goblet of Fire. Yeah. The lead girl of the...
Oh, Elizabeth Debicki, who is in Guardians of the Galaxy. She's the like gold queen chick, whatever.
She's also
the girl from The Tale.
and Cloverfield,
yeah, Mateo.
Cloverfield Paradox.
Okay, yeah. All right, I'm with you. She's also in, what else did I see?
She is yeah? French, by the way.
Oh, she is French.
Yeah.
Ha! Oui,
oui. I can spot the French. She was on sight.
She was in Widows. She was in Great Gatsby.
Yeah. It's weird that she never stuck out to me until I saw the tail. Because it looks like she has such a unique look.
Yeah, she stuck out to me because she's like 6'1" or something like that.
Anyway, Enemy. Good
call.
Enemy's
stuff.
Good. Yeah. All right, guys. It is time to talk about BetterHelp.
BetterHelp.
Yes. All right. Okay. All right.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
It's after the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, we all made it through.
Mm-hmm.
Some people find the holidays extremely stressful.
Mm-hmm.
I was not one of those people. Until this year.
Oh, no.
This year, it was extremely stressful. For me, it was a little bit higher than normal stress. But for someone who is dealing with active depression, active anxiety, it probably would have been very, very stressful. So probably there are people out there listening that did have that experience. And I don't know if you've been treated or not, but if you haven't been, or if you've been looking for alternatives or things like that, this is a great service. It's called BetterHelp, betterhelp.com. And it's an online counseling service where you sign up, you answer a few questions, and you get matched to a licensed therapist, usually in your area, that you can interact with online from the privacy of your own home and actually do video chats, like regular therapy appointments. You can send messages back and forth. You can text. You can just do audio chats. You can do really any number of things. But the point is that you get help and access to counseling at really the click of a mouse. So this is a service that we've believed in, and that we really, if you need something like this for stress, anxiety, depression, addiction, things like that, they have you covered. Go to betterhelp.com. It's good stuff. I want to say something that's tangential to this. Suicide rates also go up over the holidays. We talk a lot about suicide prevention on this show. Now, this BetterHelp is not a suicide prevention place. If you need help, call 1-800-273-8255 is the suicide prevention hotline. What is it called? Lifeline?
I don't know the official name of it, but I do know that they are moving forward with a new 3-digit emergency line for a suicide helpline, much like 911.
Right.
I believe it's going to be 988.
Yeah.
But it's not officially working yet, but that's coming soon, which is huge, because asking people to dial a 1-800 number when they're having suicidal thoughts, that's helpful, and it's proven statistically to help,
mm-hmm.
but it's still more work than some people are even able to do when
yes.
they're in that kind of a state. Whereas a 3-digit thing, it's going to improve things a lot.
Yeah. But if you are having thoughts about harming yourself in any way, call that number, 1-800-273-8255. BetterHelp is not a suicide prevention service. But the reason that I bring this up is that if you're not to that level, if you're not to like, oh, I'm thinking about harming myself, but I am having problems. I'm having problems with depression or anxiety or nervousness or whatever you want to call it, you don't have to wait for it to get to that point to ask for help. Go to betterhelp.com, fill out a survey, a few questions and things like that, get matched and be on your way to addressing some issues. I had a great therapist and is still using the service, and it's fantastic, very easy to do. Just do it right now. Go to betterhelp.com/sincast and you get a 10% discount on your first month. That's not nothing, I promise. Go to betterhelp.com/sincast. Do it now. Do it now. Right? If you need it, do it now.
Do we want to recommend or a warn? Actually, I'm going to do a warn because quick recommend. I finally saw Chernobyl, and Chris has raved about it already and recommended it before. So I won't use my slot to recommend that, but I recommend that.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the end of the second episode where they send those three poor motherfuckers down into the water with lights, and then the lights start to go off one by one as they're radiation monitors start beeping and going crazy, and then it goes to black and the fucking credits roll.
Yeah.
It's one of the most freak out endings of an episode of any show I've ever seen.
Chernobyl unfortunately suffers from tons of people after the fact coming out and saying, well, not all of that happened and none of this happened and blah blah blah, and it's like, god damn it, can we just, you know, because there's nothing that takes away from the achievement that Chernobyl is.
Right.
But then when people are saying, well, in actuality, this thing right here, you know, I guess that's what people say about us when we do a video, but like, you know, it sucks because Chernobyl's really good, really well made, especially, and in that episode, especially, you're talking about, is great. The one at the end where Jared Harris is going through all the what happened and everything,
yeah.
Even though that's never been established or anything, it still sounds good enough to me that it's like, that's a great explanation for how, you know.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, I'm sure there's a scientist that's like, fuck you, no.
Anyway, I was riveted. They played a marathon, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, Christmas Day, one of those, and I watched all four of them. Four of them?
Yeah, it's four.
Fantastic. Right. But my warn, I watched a movie called Sleepaway Camp 3.
Oh, good.
Like, for real?
This sounds awesome.
Did you not see my notes?
This is a horror movie?
Well, it thinks it is. It's more of a comedy. So Sleepaway Camp, the original, was sort of a lower budget, but still attempting to be serious knockoff of Camp Crystal Lake, whatever.
Friday the 13th.
Friday the 13th. Summer camp, murders happen, yada yada. Then there's apparently a second one where they made it a little campier, and one of the counselors started murdering everybody. I have not seen one or two, but I have seen three. And three opens with this killer girl who had been one of the killer from the second movie, who's one of the counselors, only this time they reopened the camp, and she's one of the campers. And everybody keeps telling her, you look old for a camper. You look old for a camper. How old are you? She says, 70. You look older than that. Whole fucking movie. While she's killing people left and right. I had the most fun watching this movie. I kept going into the other room to tell my wife all the ways. Now, this movie was made in the 80s. I think it's, 88, 89? Somewhere in there, because...
Yeah, it's 89.
The first thing I recognized was all the rampant bigotry and racism.
Oh.
So, like, one guy is there at the camp. He's a camper. His name is Tony. And one girl says to another girl, that Tony, he's kind of cute. And the second girl goes, ew, he's Mexican. Like, dead serious.
Yeah.
There's like a grown owner of the camp who fucks one of the students. They get killed in the middle of it. The way that she kills people is always different, and the murders are almost always off screen. But like, they play this, the counselors have them playing this game. They call it the blindfold game. This is a game I played in elementary school, but these are high school students.
Right.
You split into pairs. One person is a blindfold, and the other person has to guide them to a destination through the forest, and it's about trust. Mm-hmm. And this is the mechanism by which she basically kills everyone. Let's play the trust game, and I'll walk you off a ravine. Let's play the trust game. I'm going to bury you in trash and run over your face with a lawnmower. It's
multiple times.
Awesome. It's so bad. I want to watch the first two now.
So this is Sleepaway Camp 3, right?
3, yes.
Pamela Springsteen, who is the sister of Bruce Springsteen, is Angela in this.
Angela is...
I'm guessing she's the main chick.
She would have to be, I guess.
She's the first one that pops up, but I don't know.
Does she look young, brunette? Or does she look middle-aged with white hair?
I'm looking at pictures right now. Like, is that maybe her?
Yeah, that looks like her. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the sister?
That's Bruce Springsteen's sister.
Holy God, she's a terrible actress. Very bad. Bad, though, some of the worst acting I've ever seen in my life.
And then there's this girl.
She's in it. She's the one that, she gets down with Tony. She's okay. The one that thinks Tony's cute, but the other one says, ew, he's Mexican.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Is the same girl racist to everybody, or are there different racists?
Everybody's racist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Except the black guy and the Mexican guy.
Of course, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a warn, because it's not good. And any of you that pop in are going to be like, what the fuck? But it was the right time, right place, right mix of bad acting, nudity, shitty horror. It is a Jeremy special.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to go back for seconds and thirds. Sleepaway Camp 3, all bitches. Right.
All right. Oh, wow.
Did you ever watch, I'm sorry, did you ever watch Wrong Turn at Tahoe?
Okay, so I loaded it up the day you tweeted about it. I loaded it up on Amazon Prime, but I realized I have had too much wine, and I will not remember this if I watch it. And then, yeah, I've been on a kick of watching other stuff for the bracket and whatnot, but I haven't gotten. But it's definitely going to be watched.
I don't know which one to pick out of this group. I'm going to go ahead with Wreck a Warning, High Life.
Mm. Ah, Bobby P, right?
Yeah.
Bobby P.
As you have Mia Goth in it, and who else is in this?
Mia Goth.
She was in The Cure for Wellness. She was the. She plays. I mean, with a name like Mia Goth, of course, she's always plays these strange type characters.
Oh, she was in Nymphomaniac.
She was.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I don't know what the deal is with this movie at all, and and maybe it's just. I mean, you're talking about a movie that's like getting on best lists. It's also getting on worst lists. It's got a 5.9 on the IMDb.
Wow.
So apparently, when you like it, you just love it. And when you hate it, you really hate it. But it's about these prisoners who are sent to space for like a fertility experiment. And Juliette Binoche plays the scientist who's trying to get this done. Now, the prisoners, there's I think an equal number of female prisoners and male prisoners. They are not allowed to have sex with each other. And the guys have to come in and like give samples to Juliette Binoche. And I guess she tries to impregnate the women and everything, and nothing seems to be working. We know that it does work though, because the very first scene of the movie is Pattinson is out on like trying to fix something on the ship, and he's got a baby monitor and there's a baby looking at like all these random images that are coming from Earth on the screen. And that's that girl's TV essentially. Ooh. Is these random images. So he hears the baby crying or whatever, or babbling or whatever. But like, so the whole thing is about like, well, what happened then? Because why is he the only one left with this baby at this point? So that's what the story is about on High Life. And there is a scene in this movie. There's a construct in this. I think they call it the fuck box.
Nice. Oh, I've seen that.
You have? What, at Walmart?
The fuck box, yes. It was in that place in Gatlinburg with all the Deltas.
Oh, it was in the Gatlinburg. That's right.
My uncle had one of those.
Yeah, of course he did.
God damn.
Yeah, they marked it down from $3.99. It was $2.99 over the Christmas holidays. Fuck box. There's a scene in here. This is where like the people go to get off. They go into this room and there's a big long scene with Juliette Binoche where it's like this. You don't know exactly what kind of contraption it is, but it's a weird masturbation scene.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, yeah, right.
See you guys later.
So yeah, it's basically just the story of like what happened and why Pattinson is alone with this girl, with this baby at this point. And like, what, how did this happen? How did they have the successful fertility? All this other stuff. And I just like at the end of it, I was like, you know, that was, that was okay. That was good, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what happened though. I know what happened, but I don't understand the purpose. I don't understand why would somebody think this is great? I was lost on that one for a bit. It may require multiple viewings at some point, but I don't think I got it. I didn't get it.
This is all set in space.
Mm-hmm.
Is it got a nice vibe to it? Like because we all like space movies and things like that. Does it have?
There's occasional some flashbacks to Earth too. I don't remember if there's something going on Earth that requires fertility. You know, they need babies. It's like Children of Men or something like that. I don't know if that's what's going on. I'm assuming that's what it is. Or if Juliette Binoche is just crazy, because her character is not all the way there. She's not all the way there. But there, I mean, it's there's enough interesting in it to be like, watch that. You know, maybe we should discuss this movie at some point. I don't even remember it coming out, but I heard people talking about it suddenly by the end of the year because it's like one of these best movies. And like I said, it's got a 5.9 on the IMDb. I watched it. I'd probably give it a 6 something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what exactly this movie's about, but it's a wreck of Warren because I feel like it's a movie that needs to get watched and we need to discuss it and we all need to collectively figure out whether or not it's worth talking about.
We're going
to
spend our time figuring out if you should spend your time.
That's right. That's
Mia Goth was also Sarah in Suspiria, remake. And this was directed by Claire Denis. What has Claire Denis done?
And she's famous.
Oh, she did Chocolat.
That was Lasse Hallström who did that. But I'm trying to see if she did anything that is immediately.
Jeez, it's all French stuff.
Yeah.
But she's still famous, like at least in French circles.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. André Benjamin is in it.
3000
in High Life.
Yeah, André 3000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, I think it's a movie that if you watch, you're going to be coming back going, boy, this is the fucking best. Mm. And if you watch, you'll be like, I don't know what the fuck happened. and
let's watch it and see if that happens. I would love it if we had the reverse reactions. And I loved it and you were like, what the fuck was
and
that?
And when I say don't know what the fuck happened, it's pretty clear like what. It's pretty clear the actions that are happening. Like, okay, I get what you just don't know the why and the there's a lot of why in this. Why did this happen? Why did they do it this way? And so you have to and the ending of it is one of those where you're like, yeah, you could interpret this a number of ways by the end of this, like this ending. But that's why I say Wreck of Warren. It's an interesting movie, but I'm not sure if it's completely understandable.
All right. Well, I'm sold. I'm going to watch it.
Okay.
Hey, you want to get sad?
Always.
One of the contenders for Best of the Decade that I've been seeing on a lot of lists is called A Separation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I love this movie.
You've seen this movie?
Mm-hmm. Seen it twice.
Interesting. 2011 movie. Just watched it. It's on Netflix right now. Just to summarize what it is, it starts off with a very moving scene. It's in Farsi. It's set in Iran. And it's a couple arguing that the woman is saying that they should be divorced, but she has to apply for like permission for the court to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't done anything technically untoward. He doesn't beat her. He's not abusing drugs. He's good to their kid, that kind of thing. He's taking care of his father, who has Alzheimer's, very advanced Alzheimer's, who stays with them, and he takes care of them. The wife really does the lion's share. He works. And so the judge says you can't divorce. Regardless, she moves out anyway.
And this is Iran, right? So this is, it's very male-centric about everything regarding marriages and
everything regarding legal issues.
Yes.
Overall. Okay, so that impacts the family. She moves out, lives with her sister or mom or whatever, her mom actually, and he continues to raise the daughter, stays with him, and he has to get a house guest or a house caregiver to stay with his dad while he goes to work. So he brings this woman in to interview for the work. She says, that's not enough money for you to pay me. He says, look, that's all I got. Take it or not. She's kind of waffling whether she's going to take it or not, but she shows up the next day.
Ooh.
He goes to work. This is a very interesting part of the movie. This is a wreck of Warren for me, by the way. This is a very interesting part of the movie. The father is so out of it that he didn't get to the bathroom on time, so he actually soils himself. This woman, who is a devout, devout, devout Muslim, calls a hotline to ask a religious leader if it is a sin for her to clean him off because it's just her and him. So, you know, they're not married, they're not related, that kind of thing. So she gets permission from this religious leader and does this, and it becomes kind of a bone of contention. She's like, I didn't sign up for this. She then gets her husband involved, and he's like, why are you getting your husband involved? She's like, yeah, he can do the same work. In fact, it would be better because he can clean him up if he needs to. And so husband doesn't show up. All this stuff happens. It ends up
with a scene where he fires her. He's like, you know what? I can't deal with this. I'm going to find somebody else. You need to leave. By the way, I looked in my bedroom and I saw that there's some money missing. So you must have stolen that because nobody else would have. And she, being a religious person, takes huge offense to this and really starts like getting aggressive about like, no, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. It turns out to where he basically kind of like shoves her out the door in a certain way and closes it. You don't know what happened after that. You see it from the perspective of the thing. And I won't say anything more about the plot after that. No, it's not anything gross or anything like that. But it's fascinating what happens after that. What I didn't like about this movie is that it's goddamn depressing. Every fucking part of this movie is depressing, from the relationship with the old man, from the relationship with the housekeeper, her relationship with her husband, his relationship with his estranged wife, her relationship with the housekeeper. Everybody is just so depressing. I pitched it as like the depressing version of a Marriage Story, because Marriage Story at least has some breaths of air where you come up and you're like, oh, some frivolity, some real life stuff. But then it goes back into despair. This is all despair. Now, having said that, it's extremely well shot. It's extremely well acted. It gives you a perspective of a different culture from the U.S. side, at least. So I would recommend watching it. It is just not a feel-good, happy movie.
Oh, man. I would full-on recommend this movie. This is a huge recommend for me. I've seen it twice. I think it's great. And yes, there are depressing things in it, but that movie is super well made.
Yeah, it is.
And it is fascinating to see a completely different country and how unfair it is to women in general. Like every single thing that goes to a court, the court in this is just some random, you walk into some dude's like he's at a behind a desk and it's not even a room.
It's just like a closet. Basically.
Yeah. And they sit there and say, well, this happened. Well, no, really this happened. And the guy just kind of makes a judgment based off of what they say. There's no other evidence that you like can present or anything. It's just their word against yours type of thing. And it's just like, oh my God, I can't believe this is even how disputes are settled at all. It doesn't make any sense. But I fully recommend this movie. I haven't seen it in a while. This guy who directed it, Asghar Farhadi, did a movie called Fireworks Wednesday, which was on Mubi. I don't know how long ago, but that movie was good. It also had similar situations in that one, but it's also a very good movie. I love A Separation. I'm not surprised that it got pitched by a few of our listeners as a best of the decade.
Yeah, I didn't. I had high expectations for it, but I didn't connect to it, I guess, just emotionally. Because it seemed like it was purposefully, and this is the point of the movie, purposefully really getting into the muck of like the shitty things.
Yeah.
Has to do. Now the guy who plays the husband of the housekeeper is spectacular. His character's arguably he's complex, but he's a spectacular actor and his performance is spectacular. But it's not somebody that you necessarily root for. Anyway, yeah.
So no football in the groin?
No.
That'd be fucking great.
Yeah.
Do we want to do questions?
I'm sorry.
We can do some questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
Did you ever have a moment when you watched a movie and a reference / joke / comment came up, which you did not get, but then weeks, months, years later, it dawned on you all of a sudden what it meant, and you found a new appreciation for that scene? This person is excluding adult humor that you did not get as a child, which is a big caveat because there's a million of those. What are some of the examples of a reference that you didn't get until later on?
So in the movie Nashville, there is a part where an aspiring singer is invited by Ned Beatty and all these guys to come sing at a bar and sort of be her tryout and everything. She's an awful singer.
Yes, she is.
She's an awful singer, but As she sings in front of all these guys, the guys start hooping and hollering, asking her to strip down while she sings. Mm. And because the allure of being a famous singer is so strong for her, she does this. And when I first saw this, I was like, I think I was probably 17 or 18 when I first saw Nashville. I was like, why did they even give her this time to sing if they knew she was such an awful singer and everything? Why would they do that? That's what my mind was, where my mind was at. If she's such a horrible singer, why did you even give this? And why did she take her clothes off? I don't even get why she even bothered doing that. That's not going to get her a singing contract. Of course, like, I forgot all about this until I saw Nashville recently, like maybe a year or two ago, and saw this scene completely differently.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, so she did that. They invited her because they wanted her to strip down in front of them. Mm-hmm. She stripped down because she thought she was going to get a singing job doing that. But as a younger person, I just did not understand at all why they would invite her to do this and why she would do that. And then there's the scene afterwards where the guy's like, man, this is Nashville, man. They're gonna eat you alive here and all that. But I was just like, I just never understood that. And then you just realize, okay, there were ulterior motives that I didn't know were there from the beginning, and that afterward, like when she actually did it, that she actually thought this was going to get her somewhere.
Is that an uncomfortable scene? It's an uncomfortable scene because it looks like she does not want to do this at the beginning.
Yeah.
From my memory, does it turn into where she's actually, quote, enjoying this, like she's enjoying the attention? It's always that she's uncomfortable with this, but she thinks she has to do it.
She's a champ in that she is doing that. She thinks she's doing a great job singing and everything, and all these guys like, woo-wee, or whatever, and then finally they're just like, you know, like, take it off, sister, and all this other stuff. And as she's pulling her dress off, you can see in her face, this is not something she wanted. She didn't sign up for at all.
Yeah.
This is, and she probably realizes even in that moment, even though she's doing it, this probably isn't going to get me anywhere, but I will do the very last desperate thing that I can do to possibly become famous at the end, you know, by the end of this.
Yeah. Cause that's her only goal. I mean, she's hyper, she has everything except for the talent.
Yeah, exactly.
To actually make it. Like, she's got the drive and the determination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's presented really, really well in the movie where it's not even like close where you can kind of fudge it. She's awful.
Yeah. And the movie has the foresight to show her not exactly happy about this. This is a movie that came out in 1975. This was around the time that I started watching all these movies from the 70s that I had missed and everything. I probably looked at the scene like going, it's 70s. What are you going to do? They always did this shit. Women were just taking their clothes off for no reason in this, and it's just their way to put nudity.
That's how I remember the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. Just a way of putting nudity in the movie and look at what we can get away with now that there's an MPAA and all that. And then later on, just realizing, you know what? Oh, and maybe I should have known younger. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it just didn't play that way to me the first time I saw it.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. What do you think?
What do I want to go with here?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll give you two. A quick one is the first Kingsman movie. The Kingsman, the Secret Service, is that what it was called, the first one?
Yeah, yes. Secret Service.
Mm-hmm. So Mark Hamill is playing a professor that gets kidnapped in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought it was charming. And then after I'd seen the movie, I found out in the original comic it's actually Mark Hamill. It's not some professor. Like, Mark Hamill, the actor, gets kidnapped. So when they made the movie, they hired him to play a professor. Now, I'm a little unsure why they didn't just keep it Mark Hamill, since that was the original comic.
Because he is a professor in the movie. He's not playing himself in the movie.
He's not playing Mark Hamill in the Kingsman movie. Right.
Yeah,
he's playing Professor What's-His-Nuts.
Arnold.
But in the comic, it's actually Mark Hamill, and it made a little more charming for me.
Nice.
The other one is not in the spirit of the question, because I'm a rebel, but my favorite movie, The Matrix, there was a line that bothered me for years that I just thought was Well, I thought it was a problem. I thought it was a mistake in the film. And it's when, right when they get done going to the Oracle and they come back and he sees the deja vu cats and they realize that they've changed something and there's brick walls, and Morpheus turns around and says to Cypher, give me your phone. And Trinity says they'll be able to trace it and hands her phone to him. Cypher's phone is in the garbage can outside where mm-hmm. he dropped it when they got out of the limo so that the agents would know where to come. So when the first, I don't know, 15 times I saw this movie, when Trinity says they'll be able to track it, use mine, I'm always like, how does she know he's the mole?
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't. When she's talking to him in the very first scene of the movie, he's on his phone and she's on a regular phone, and that's when the agents show up to get her.
Oh.
And so she knows they'll be able to track it because the last time she talked to him on Cypher's phone, the agent showed up.
Ooh,
so whether he's a mole
that.
Or not, they've tapped his phone in her eyes.
Uh-huh.
But every time, the first half the time I watched this movie, I was like, that's why? How does she know? Why doesn't she just say to Morpheus, he's a double agent?
Yeah.
If she knows they'll be able to, but it's not that. She doesn't figure out he's a mole. She just knows his phone is traceable by the agents.
Ah.
And then once I had that revelation, I was like, wow, I'm such an idiot. I never
really thought twice about it, but yeah, I could see it either way.
Yeah, it always bugged me that she knew some secret, and there was a scene on the cutting room floor where she was like threatening, and you tell him what you're doing, Cypher, I'm going to turn you in. But that's not the case. she's just remembering. Anyway, there you go.
That's nice. Okay, I got a couple. There's so much to unpack in Jordan Peele's Us, like all the subtext and all the Easter eggs and all the stuff that goes with it. And we had, like a two and a half hour discussion with our friends afterwards at Sin Week mm-hmm. about the movie and all the themes and all the references and stuff like that. One thing I don't think that we brought up at that point was the fluoride line. At some point when they're driving, the family is having a normal conversation, and the daughter is looking at her phone, I believe, and she says, wow, the government is using fluoride to control our brains. And I didn't give much thought to it. But it's a couple of things. First of all, it's kind of an explanation thrown out to what may be going on with the tethered and all that stuff. But it's also a reference to Dr. Strangelove with General Ripper,
mm-hmm.
where he has that long diatribe to Peter Sellers about, like, you know, you ever seen a commie drink water?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't think I'd have, sir. Yeah. And he's like, no, it's all straight vodka. Yeah. Those commies drink fucking vodka. Because they know that they're using the fluoride in their in the water to demasculinize us or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But it's a direct reference to Dr. Strangelove.
That's weird.
And I missed it. And that's a great moment in that fucking thing, because he is totally lost.
Is that a straight up reference to Dr. Strangelove? Because,
from what I read, it is.
Okay, because I always thought that the fluoride thing was something that conspiracy theorists had always bandied about and everything, and it wasn't just the movie that brought that up, but
I think it was Jordan Peele trying to give a little shout out to
nice
it. And it made me go back and watch that scene. God damn, I love that. Peter Sellers should be up on the Mount Rushmore of like the best actors of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm. yeah
and I think he died, mid-80s, something like that?
I'm not sure.
It seems like he's kind of gotten lost in the conversation, because he was technically a character actor, but he embodied all those characters so perfectly.
1980.
So right after Being There came out.
Mm-hmm. Because
that was 80.
Being There was 79.
Wow. So there's that. And the other thing, just a quick shout out to this. I've talked about in It Chapter 1, the smiling librarian in the background when Ben is doing his thing, and it's just this creepy, and you can get chills just thinking about it, like this creepy librarian smiling in the background. That's a good example of this. But contrast that to It Chapter 2. I don't know what It Chapter 2 is trying to do. I don't know how those are such disparate films. There's a scene in there where Beverly goes back to her childhood home and everything, and it's the old lady. This is the fucking trailer. By the way, I can't believe that they released that whole scene as the trailer.
Yeah.
I gave that away. But there's a scene where she's actually looking at the January fire or whatever it is note, and she's smiling, and in the background, you see the old lady like scamper out.
Mm-hmm.
It has the elements. Both have the same elements. The second scene is not fucking scary at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even approaching scary. You know that she's it. Mm-hmm. Like, she, you know that there's something fucked up here. It's not a trick to trick your eyes to get you to freak out or anything like that. It's that whole fucking movie is full of just obvious shit that doesn't freak you out at all. It misses all of the elements of the first story.
Yeah, mm-hmm. if that woman had been just normal,
yeah,
instead of like giving the sense of unease right off the bat with the, you know, talking and then having that stare for like 10 seconds thing, and then having the like the scar on her chest and all these different things that kept coming up in there, is like that little thing in the background. And if you could just take out the musical stinger too,
yeah,
that would have been a much creepier moment in the background.
Yeah,
but they set it up where you're expecting it to happen, even if you hadn't seen the trailer.
God, those jump scares, those CG characters are so just. I understand why they did the CG. They wanted to make it more effects driven, but it completely cheapened all of the scares. I really hate this movie.
I haven't seen it.
I hate this. You didn't see it at all?
No, you guys were pretty down on it.
It's like it went from, I don't know if that's really all that good when I first saw it, to I really don't like this movie.
It, when the you know, the kid cast is a big deal, but like they're in Derry already, and it makes sense that, you know, that this, you know, this evil force that's based there is terrorizing them. Now when they're adults and they've done this blood oath thing to come back that they don't even remember that they did.
They just know to come back.
You know, Mike and his like, hey, it's Mike, and you know, not saying who it is.
He does say it's me. I think he may do that.
But like, it, when they come back, and then like the whole movie sets them to go like, we need to go back and remember what happened.
Yeah.
And it's basically like, what it's almost plays like what they didn't show you in It One, like all these different things with the kids that happened after the big breakup at the end of the first movie. Like they went off and experienced other stuff related to It that they need to re-experience, and none of it's any good.
Yeah,
none of it.
No,
the especially that scene with Ben and Bev.
Yeah.
like Bev, like, we did this in the Sims video, but like Bev does that whole thing where she's like, do you think I'd really go out with somebody as fat and disgusting as you? And that's bad enough, but then they have to, well, we can't stop there, we got to make her like a flamey head scary at all. It doesn't. I mean, after all the things that they've seen in their lives, what is a flamey head, Bev? What is that going to do with anything? What is that going to do?
Oh my God! I mentioned this in the Sins video, but the fact that scene where they're all together at the Chinese restaurant and all that stuff, where they're like high fiving and like all laughing and drinking and all that stuff, it's such an obvious thing. They have chemistry, guys. Mm. We've got talented actors that are so. And then you've got like fucking all the star power of Bill Hader and Jessica Chastain and
James McAvoy.
And then you got these randos with Eddie and Ben.
Yeah,
at least to us. And, I don't know if this,
and the Old Spice guy, Isaiah Mustafa.
Oh, that's right. One of those guys
was on The Wire. And in the Treme, I can't think of his name, but he was the fuck up son of the union boss in season 2 of The Wire, Ziggy.
Oh.
Is that Eddie or Ben?
I think that's Eddie.
It's Eddie.
Because he's also in Sinister. He's the cop in Sinister.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other guy I didn't recognize at all.
Yeah, I didn't either. It is kind of interesting. They got adult actors that pretty much look like the kids in there. Even Ben, who they've made hot in it and everything. Even he looks like the kid and everything. That is kind of cool. But
you look like every Brazilian soccer player.
Yeah.
Who actually is the greatest detective on film? Ooh. This question further stipulates who actually does some detecting and not just suddenly realize the truth or use a fantastical gadget to give them all the answers. Newt.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Yeah.
Doctor Who?
This is my, once again, a chance for me to pimp the greatness that is Zero Effect.
I knew you were going to answer this one.
Well, of course. Yeah. How else am I? I mean, I'm going to say the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Not saying that shit.
Definitely.
He
does calculations and shit.
He does. Daryl Zero, as played by Bill Pullman, is basically Sherlock Holmes. They've made it it's a Sherlock Holmes movie, but with everybody, you know, Ben Stiller's playing Watson, mm-hmm. essentially, in this. They've got the same kind of relationship that Holmes and Watson have. But there is actual, like, research, and there's even a whole monologue and a narration monologue in there where he's like, I can't underestimate the importance of good research. Mm-hmm. And talking about, like, he's just very knowledgeable about his subject. And there's a scene in there where they're talking, they're looking at a crime scene photo, something that happened in this hotel in the 70s. And he's like, you see this? The bed is 3 feet away from the wall. Like back in the 1970s, you couldn't have a bed close to a radiator or whatever because of fire codes or whatever. He's like, no inspector would have allowed this to pass. And all this other stuff. It's like stuff just off the top of his head that's just, it's just amazing. And he doesn't have these sudden house realizations, which, you know, House was a Sherlock Holmes medical show, essentially. Uh-huh. It's not like these sudden, he does have epiphanies, but it's because you can see him thinking and you can see him going over all the knowledge that he has. It's not like, you know, he goes and talks to Robert Sean Leonard and Robert Sean Leonard says something about, like, he has a bar mitzvah to attend, and House goes, oh, bar mitzvah.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, it's he suddenly knows what the disease is.
That's the problem. I love that show.
Yeah.
But that's the biggest fucking problem I have with that show,
mm-hmm.
is that they do all this work to figure out what it's not every time. And the answer always comes from fucking luck.
Yeah.
Or some sort of happenstance that somebody says, oh, I dropped my injection of insulin. Insulin? Yeah. Must be pancreatic cancer.
I will say, his interplay with Robert Sean Leonard is one of my favorite television relationships ever.
It's awesome.
For sure. It's I love House. Don't get me wrong.
I do too.
Yeah, I didn't think you were ripping on House.
No. It's just that House is clearly what this question,
yeah.
you know, like,
saying, don't answer.
Don't answer. And in this one, Zero Effect, Daryl Zero, you can see him actually going through all the papers,
yeah.
and going through all the, like, knowledge and the writing, reading letters. And he even reads Ryan O'Neill's poem that he wrote in college. he's knowing this. He goes to the fitness center where Ryan O'Neill is, just to start talking to him. And there's a whole point where he's like talking to the guy in the bathroom and everything. After he talks to him, he's like most Harvard grads, takes little prompting to say that he's from Harvard, or that he went to Harvard. He's like, I say Celtics. This guy starts talking about Harvard. and it's getting to know the subject of the person that he's not really investigating him, but he is trying to investigate why someone is blackmailing him and who could be the blackmailer and why and everything. And that movie is just so good. I wish I wasn't on an island about this movie.
No, you're not. I love that movie. Too, I just need to see it more.
Me too.
All right, I'm going to give you a couple scenes. The one that just came to me that's not on my list is David Strathairn in Sneakers, in that scene where he figures out where the fuck Robert Redford was taken through audio only.
Oh, that scene is so fucking awesome.
Like, it is. And we haven't talked about Sneakers recently, so I thought I'd throw that out, because he definitely counts. Then the other one I thought of is McNulty and Bunk on The Wire. You still haven't seen The Wire. There's an episode, I think it's season one of The Wire, that these two guys are murder detectives, homicide detectives.
Did you say Bunk?
That's his nickname.
Oh, okay.
I was about to come up with his name.
Wendell Pierce. It's Wendell Pierce.
It's Wendell Pierce. Yeah.
I don't know the actor or the character.
If you had said Twilight, black guy in Twilight, I would have been like,
I did say Clarence Thomas. There's a scene. Now they've been pulled off on this special detail at The Wire where they're going after the drug dealers, but they're homicide detectives. They're true police. They're
consider themselves real police. And there's a scene where they almost completely solve a murder in 3 minutes, only using variations of the word fuck. This is a cold case murder, and it's already been investigated. And they come in here, and they just start detecting, investigating. And like he opens the fridge and sees like a crack, like a bullet. Maybe the bullet went through the fridge. And, like maybe the fridge was open. He's like, fuck me. And then he turns and looks at the window and sees a bullet hole. And he's like, fuck me, motherfucker. And they go, you've seen this scene, right? And they go around. It's almost 3 full minutes of just variations of fuck. And by the end of it, they found the fucking shell casing in the backyard, like 30 yards away from the house where the murder took place. And it's just fantastic.
Huh.
McNulty's one of the most interesting characters ever to me because he's a fuck up. He's a drunk, but he's one of the best detectives ever. I love also that same season where you see he tails a suspect using his kids. They're in like a flea market kind of place, and he's taught his kids how to tail a suspect, one in front, one behind, and alternating. Huh. And he has them tail the suspect through the fucking flea market, picks him up on the other end in the car, and they follow the guy. Pretty awesome.
McNulty does all sorts of shit that would get you fired.
That's true. That's true.
Or jailed a lot of times. But yeah, that going back to that sneakers one, it's just... I don't think I've seen anything like it. I have seen it since because Liam Neeson's in Taken 2.
Where he used the echolocation.
Taken 2, where he's like counting the amount of seconds and like, that was a turn. That was a turn left. That was a dog barking. Okay. The Taken 2 is insane.
It is insane.
The guy, dog barking. So of course the dog is barking in the exact same spot. Fucking Taken 2.
Didn't they use it? Was it Taken 2 or 3 where they used the grenades as the echolocation?
It's Taken 2.
It was Taken 2.
Yeah, because he gets Maggie Grace on the phone and he's like, go out onto the balcony or whatever and throw a grenade. And then like, yeah, that's the echolocation. He's like, okay, you heard it in like 5 seconds. That means you're this many miles away. And then like got it, somehow triangulated it through grenade bomb. She could have like blown up so many fucking people doing that shit. You know, but like sneakers, it's something that's, you just don't ever see. I don't think I've ever really seen it done this well. And like I said, Taken 2 is the only movie that I can think of that even got close to this. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that you see Redford in that trunk and you can hear the things that he hears. Then, and you're like, yeah, what the hell? Cocktail party. What the fuck is that? How's he there? And then he goes and he tells David Strathairn, and he's like, okay, what did it sound like? What did it sound like? He's doing this braille thing and he's going through all this stuff. And he's like, all right, was there a recurring sound? And he's like, yeah, da-doom. And he's like going through all this computer thing, trying to get it exactly.
Well,
down
and then
to
they
the
all pitch in too, because they're like, oh, like seams in a bridge. Was the Bay Bridge fogged in last night? Yeah, so was the San Mateo. That leaves the Dumbarton and the whatever.
Yeah,
and they all throw in their own local knowledge to get such a great scene.
Yeah, and then I heard what I thought was cocktail party, and then Strathairn knows what that means too.
Know, right? Yeah. They're standing there with all the geese, and he says, "Remind me to make you an honorary blind."
Yeah,
that's fucking great. Mine is Columbo, and people don't realize the greatness of Columbo these days.
Oh yeah,
I grew up watching this because my parents were big mystery buffs, and Columbo, man, he's not one that's going to dazzle you with Sherlockian type of like calculations and shit like that. He's a working man. He's going to get out there. You know, he's all world weary and the wrinkled the coat and everything. And he's got his cigar and everything. And he's going to gather information to figure out what's going on. He probably has a good idea. If you're a famous person on his episode, you're going to be the killer.
Yeah. Yep.
But he's going to go through the steps to do it. He's going to butter up what he thinks maybe is the suspect. And then immediately discount it. You're like, oh, no, I just wanted an autograph for Mrs. Columbo. You know, she's a big fan. And then the whole one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets all these little bits of information. He doesn't know what's going on until the very end when he has everything together. And I always thought that was really cool. But most times he's presented as being like a guy that just puts stuff together. And by doing to do that, he has to get all the information he can out of a person. And so he's always been chummy and he's always been like disarming and everything to where it's like mentioning Celtics and the guy from Harvard will fucking talk. He knows how to push the
buttons. He's a master reader of people.
Yeah.
Like he pushes the buttons because their reaction will tell him something that he needs to know.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't start out like I've never thought of Columbo as the most intelligent detective. Mm-hmm. I've thought of him as the best reader of people.
Yeah.
And he'll set you off. He'll let you think everything's done. That's what that whole one more thing is about, is that you've just relaxed. You think you just made it through the interview, and he pops in with one more thing. And then your reaction is now you're off kilter, and you're not still in the same mindset you were before. I love Columbo, man. Like, my dad watched Perry Mason, Matlock, Murder, She Wrote, and Columbo. Columbo's the only one I ever, like, really liked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because of that. He seemed like a normal guy who was just street smart.
Yeah.
Whereas Perry Mason seemed like book smart, the definition.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matlock was just old.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a reason why The Simpsons made fun of that with all the old people having to get home to see Matlock and shit.
Matlock.
We love you, Matlock.
Oh, yes, we do.
Yes, we do. I didn't get a chance to see many of the Columbo episodes. I know they're on Netflix, but I saw I think all of the TV movies that came out in the late 80s.
Which were all good.
They were all great. Yeah. I loved every single one of them. I didn't even realize at the time that those movies came out that there was a series.
Oh yeah.
You know, so like I was surprised later on to find out, oh, they had seasons of this. but I love that too. I always got the sense that he knew exactly who did it right off the bat, it seemed like, but then he was just trying to find the evidence, you know.
I always thought that he had a very good sense, like a good bullshitter knows, right? Where
like,
he's like,
well, a lot like the Knives Out Daniel Craig character, where you find out at the end of that movie that he knew a lot more than you thought he did all the way through.
He did, but he's also, he didn't make assumptions, it seems like.
Yeah.
He would qualify if that movie had been out for 10 more years, he would probably qualify for this.
Oh, yeah.
Because yes, he does know a certain thing. He does notice a certain thing, but he doesn't know exactly what that means.
Right.
And so he's got to put all that stuff in. And then you can see his glee as soon as that last piece of the puzzle comes in. He's like, all right, let's do this. He's fucking like rolling up his sleeves and tucking his tie in and shit.
Yeah, the movie does show a couple of places where he doesn't know. He doesn't know who hired him, and he doesn't know certain things about other parts of the plot that we won't get into, but like, but he has this all, like, he has all the pieces just like floating around, you know, and as soon as one thing comes up, oh yeah, that's how it all connects.
So yeah.
He's great. That'll do it for this week. Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. Also go to SoundCloud. We also have CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter. We also have Discord. If you want to get on Discord, you can go to the Reddit page on the right side. There's a link to join there, or you can go to Facebook and private message me, and I will send you a link.
20,000 subreddit members.
Nice.
Members.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
All right.
I like it. Yeah, that's pretty good discussion over there, too. I like that place.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
A place to hang out. Unlike the YouTube comments.
That's right. But that'll do it for this week. It's Chris Atkins and Jeremy Scott and Barrett Sher. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.
But before we started the Star Wars mini-pod, Dave started rapping the Snow Informer song.
Oh my god.
Like, Informer.
Does he know the words?
Although he was saying actual words. I was like, haha, are those the words? And he's like, yes. And he broke them down.
Oh my god.
I was like, how do you know that?
That's insane.
I've never, like, even Snow doesn't remember those words.
Yeah, no.
No. I know I won't be drinking beer with you.
Oh, by the way, I saw your hoodie thing. Why did you get a hoodie that was 8?
It was an accident. I thought it said Navy B XL for navy blue. But what it actually said was Navy 8XL. And I had marked it on Amazon because it was out of stock, and I wanted it because it was like it's lined on the inside, it's like thermal or whatever. And I didn't look until I was trying to figure out when it was coming, and I noticed that 8. I've already replaced it with a proper sized one.
You had to, at that point, you did have to put it on, though,
but
right?
I did. But now, how do you deal with that, right? How do I go to any giant person I know and say, hey, are you this giant? How do because I do that without...
We know some people that are...
I'm saying, I've had some people on Twitter say, that's my size, I could wear it, and maybe that's the way to go. But I know a few really big people.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to...
You don't know the line between 4XL and 8XL, right?
I don't, and I don't know how to offer without offending.
No, I agree.
Like, I understand you are a big person.
Yeah.
That's already insulting.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, are you 8XL big? Now, if they are, I've just made them feel even shittier about themselves. If they're not, I've just insulted them.
I've been doing some estimations, and I think you might be 8X.
Size charts for Chatley's menswear. Chatley's.
Chadley, get the door, would you?
That reminds me of the Mr. Show skit where there's a David Cross is playing this like down home like vegetable seller on the street or whatever, like he's got a small grocery or whatever, and then like right after he does a commercial, there's this corporate chain called Fairsley's, and they're like Fairsley's, and like today we've got blah 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 for $1.99 today, blah blah blah, and then somehow find a way to get some little snide comment about the other guy's store in there. And so like every time it comes back to the David Cross and his small store, he's like making all these concessions that he normally wouldn't and everything. By the time the Fairsley ad is like, it's the last one, they're like going full out. They're like, our stores are not constantly on fire. And like, stuff like that. Fairsley.
This doesn't help me any more than the 8XL because I can't look at a man and go, he's 600 pounds.
Yeah. You just get into a conversation with him and then pull out your scale and just like kind of like surreptitiously put it behind
you. You step on it first and then you step back.
It's like, oh, look, a scale. I wonder how much I weigh.
Did it feel like 8XL? Like, did it feel like it was for a 600 pound person?
Yes, but more so in. I was expecting it to be longer.
Yeah.
It's more wide. And then the arms, like my arms only got like halfway through those sleeves. I don't know. But let's do work and we'll talk about this later.
Yeah, all right. Just curious.
So
I've got that charge of murdering that hooker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you guys catch up to you one of these days.
Well, I appreciate your support though.
Well, look, she deserved it.
Well, that's what I've been telling my wife for all these years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think she knows.
Mm-hmm. She knows in her heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back to sleeping in the bed now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We still have the corpse between us, like mm-hmm. literally between mm-hmm. us.
Yeah.
But
so do you play that Hey Left, No Hey Right?
The what?
You ever play that game Hey Left, Not Hey Right, Not Who's the Penis in Between Us? Did you ever play that game?
Nope.
Whenever you're sitting with, I can't believe that nobody knows this.
Oh,
you have to have at least three people sitting in a row on a bench, like at a basketball game or whatever. And when the guy on the left goes, "Hey, right, nut," and the guy on the right goes, "Hey, left, nut," and the first guy goes, "Who's the penis in between us?"
Oh, wow!
I can't believe that you missed that in junior high. That's one of my favorites.
I missed that one.
Did you know the tape my nuts to your forehead so you can see these, or tape my dick to your forehead so you can see these balls? Do you like tapes and CDs? You ever heard that song?
Fuck is going on here?
I haven't heard that
so you
either.
Say to somebody, hey, do you like tapes and CDs? And they say, yeah. And you go, how about I tape my dick to your forehead so you can see these balls? I swear you guys just forgot all of junior high. Like, this is like, I felt like this was national shit, but no, maybe it was just like localized to Indiana.
It didn't. I mean, it either didn't make it down here or it's some other.
Did you ever play Inspector Gadget or Rubber Buns and Liquor?
No.
So after everything,
I remember
you're
Inspector,
making these up.
No, I remember Inspector Gadget.
Inspector Gadget.
What is Inspector Gadget?
You basically tell somebody after everything I say, you say Inspector Gadget, and then you tell a story that makes it sound like he's looking at a girl's vagina.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
And then so, Rubber Buns and Liquor is the same thing.
Yeah, it always ends with something like, so what did you do when you went into the girl's bathroom, Inspector Gadget?
Yeah. And it's hilarious. It's like saying under the sheets after any song title in a church hymnal.
Or adding anal to certain questions.
The only thing I used to do in Boy Scouts was the NWA joke. It's the, what do you call nuts on a wall? Walnuts. What do you call nuts on a chest? Chestnuts. What do you call nuts on a chin? My dick in your mouth, bitch.
I don't have that one.